Thank you. Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for your consideration will be House Bill 237.
Point of order. We don't have a quorum.
Mr. Chairman.
You count them? Oh. We had more than enough. We have a quorum.
We have a quorum.
The first bill for our consideration will be House Bill 237. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 237 from Representative Moniz, an act relating to water and sewer districts, increasing contract bid threshold dollar amounts and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business and Economic Development, to whom is referred House Bill 237, Water and Sewer District Contracts, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Berg, Kennedy, Gay, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Somers, and Walters. One no vote, Representative Edmonds, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 237 do pass. And there is a standing committee amendment, and I'm going to turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from across the hill, where there is a large advanced education facility. Now, how's that for an introduction?
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the standing committee amendment first. So I'd like to move House Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 237 and ask for your favorable consideration. Basically what this does, Mr. Chairman, is when we drafted the bill, we missed also on page 3, line 15 and 16, we struck $7,500 and inserted $30,000 and would ask for your favorable consideration on that amendment, and I'll explain the amendment, Mr. Chairman, or the motion.
Question being called on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The amendment has passed. Committee of the Whole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, what we're trying to do here is we have small sewer and water districts in a lot of our communities, and the bid threshold right now is $7,500. That's very limiting to a lot of these communities that are trying to get some work done. So we would like to raise that limit to $30,000. Basically, that's it. It's right now the cities and towns have a limit of $30,000. University of Wyoming has limits of $25,000. So basically, they're just asking for an increase in that limit. And that's basically it, Mr. Chairman. I'd call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of House Bill 237, presented by Representative Moniz, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against it, say no. House Bill 237 has passed the House. The next bill, Representative Yagi.
Mr. Chair, could I have privilege of the floor, please?
Yes, sir.
Folks, really glad to have somebody from the Oasis of Southwest Wyoming here. We have our superintendent came to see us, our school district, and his wife, Marcia, and five kids made the trip over and very interested in what we do. Would you please welcome them?
Thank you.
Representative Blake.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
It's yours.
Also up in this gallery is a young man named Alexander. Him and I got in a little snow fight out front, and as you can tell by my jacket here, it's all dark. He nailed me, so I think he's going to be a pitcher. So thank you, Alexander.
Good job. Get him. Okay, so the next bill for our consideration will be House Bill 197. The reading clerk will read the bill. 210?
I might have the old list.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I amendment to House Bill 210? We just did 237.
House Bill 210 from Representative Dan Zwanenser, an act relating to the Office of the State Public Defender, assigning operation of the Guardian Ad Litem Program as a division of the Office of the State Public Defender, making conforming amendments, specifying duties of the Guardian Ad Litem Division, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 210, Guardian Ad Litem Division, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Escobar, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters. To no votes, Representative Baker and Miller, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 210 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I will let the representative explain the bill and read in the amendment when he gets to that point. And Representative Zwanenser, the younger, will manage the bill.
Representative Zwanenser, Chairman Zwanenser, the younger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Northrop, also the younger and a long distinguished line of members of this body. So let me give you some history on the Guardian Ad Litem program, for those of you who haven't been around for 10 years. This was a program originally in the state Supreme Court, and it had grown. It was a contract attorney program, and in about 2006, 2007, the state Supreme Court said, you know, this is really not our thing. We're a judicial branch. We're not really supposed to be in charge of having contract attorneys all over the state and doing these type of things. And so after an unsuccessful bill attempt, it actually got put in a budget footnote, and so they moved the Guardian Ad Litem Division in a budget footnote over to the Office of the Public Defender. We tried for a couple years to bring it back, but it didn't work until 2011, where we actually took it out of a budget footnote and put it in statute that the Guardian Ad Litem Program was part of the Public Defender's Office. And so what this bill does is a couple things. It's mostly housekeeping. Actually, after the amendments, it's almost all housekeeping at this point. What I was attempting to do was expand the authority and purview of the Guardian Ad Litems into involuntary commitments and adult protective services. The committee felt that went a little too far, so you'll see there on page 4, the Standing Committee Amendment basically takes out lines 21 and 22 on page 4 and lines 1 through 5. The committee didn't feel maybe that the Guardian Ad Litem program was ready to take on these type of responsibilities. There's unknown costs, unknown number of cases. And so that's what the Standing Committee Amendment does. It takes out most of the expanded purview of the Guardian Ad Litem program. And so if there's no questions on the Standing Committee Amendment, I'd ask for its approval at this time.
Question. Question being called on the Standing Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed to the amendment? We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 210. And what this does is just a cleanup. When we took out, you'll see on page 4, lines 21 and 22, we didn't take out the same language, or the committee didn't, on lines 9 and 10. So really, this is a Committee of the Whole Amendment which just conforms to what the Standing Committee Amendment did. We just missed a section. And I'd be happy to answer questions on that or just call for the question on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
Question. Question being called. All those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We've adopted the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So when in 2011, when this went into our statutes, the rules and regs for the Public Defender's Office and the Guardian Ad Litem program actually already referred to it as a division, not a program, and that has a deputy, not an administrator, you'll see as the language changes. So really these are just housekeeping measures in the statute that conform to the rules and regs. You will see the important language of the bill on page 4 in Romanet 7 and 8. We're expanding the guardianship ad litem program. We're actually expanding the guardian ad litem division responsibilities to be the guardian ad litems appointed under permanency plans in child protection cases or in adoptions. So in adoptions and guardianships where you already can appoint a guardian ad litem, we're just saying that the guardian ad litem you appoint will be the division of the guardian ad litem under the state. These are the attorneys who already deal with children's issues when their parent can't be the responsible party for overseeing their welfare. So usually these are cases where the child and the parental termination rights, it's an abuse or neglect case of the parents, where it's not in the child's best interest to have the parent be the legal guardian and overseer. And so in the statute, we already allow for guardian ad litems and guardianships and adoptions, but this is just specifying that the GAL division will be those guardian ad litems in these cases. And I'd be happy to answer any questions on that. And that's basically the bill besides the conforming language throughout the bill to change it from program to division.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with grant recommendation that House Bill 210 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 2 passed as House Bill 210 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 11. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 11 from the Education Committee, an act relating to the study of distant education for informing recalibration of the Education Resource Block Grant Model, establishing a task force, establishing duties, requiring reporting, providing an appropriation, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 11, Distance Education Task Force, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Hunt, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Piperinen, Summers, and Throne. One no vote, Representative Yagi, signed by Representative Patton, Chairman, further reviewed by your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, who respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Patton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 11 do pass. I wish to explain for just to quickly the procedure that we use this time, as is the reader read very correctly the order that we used. That was that the bill was viewed by Committee number 4 at Education, re-referred to Committee number 2 Appropriations. Appropriations changed the amount, and by virtue of that change, they changed the body of the bill. They then agreed to Committee number 4 placing the body of the bill back before you as with their amendment. That is what the chain that went through. So when Committee number 4, number 2, number 4, and now before the body. So the body has not had an opportunity to vote on and for the recommendation of Committee number 2. You will be presented that in just a moment, and then the amended bill will be discussed and displayed by the committee members of education. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I
again move the adoption of that and yield the floor to the vice chairman from Park County.
Vice Chairman Northup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We bring you today House Bill 11. House Bill 11 is part of our recalibration process that will take place during this summer. We're going to look at the funding of schools and how schools are working. This portion of it just happens to deal with distance education. So as we took this bill to the House Appropriations Committee, they looked at it and said, as you see on the back page in the fiscal note, $200,000 for, was the question they asked, for a consultant. You guys should be able to do that in-house. So we ended up getting $200,000 axed, and with that I'm going to ask that the Vice Chairman of Appropriations present his amendment.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 11 and ask for your favorable consideration. Basically, what we did in appropriations was delete the $250,000 and give them $50,000. And then on page 4, on line 13, after 4, delete the balance of that line. In other words, basically, we're saying what the previous speaker just said. We thought they could do it in-house. So with that, I would ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment number 2? Question being called. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The committee, the amendment has been adopted, and we are back on the bill. Representative Northup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as you look through this amendment that we have on House Bill 11, Amendment number 1, what we've done is essentially go through the bill, and we cut up Section 1 and deleted that. That's all of page 1, lines 1 through 16, page 2, 1 through 8, and that was the task force portion of it, and the committee decided we'd like to have a change in that task force, so you see those people listed out there. The important portion of that is that it will be chaired by the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, and it will consist of the following members. I won't read them, but as you add those up, you'll note that that comes to 14 and not 12. It's a technical mistake, and I'd ask for your forgiveness on that. Then when you change to line 2, or page 2, page 2 says that we're going to delete lines 1 through 8 on page 2. And on page 3, we delete lines 11 through 13 and insert what is on lines 5 through 7 in the amendment. I'll be glad to explain any more of the amendment, but I'd like to move the amendment this time.
Is there any further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment number 1? Question being called for. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted, and we are back on the bill.
Thank you. So it's our intention to have this committee report, this subcommittee report, to us before the end of the summer is done so that we can work on recalibration with this. This is the distance learning portion. Distance learning, for those of you that may not be familiar with that term, is when you have a homeschooled kid or you have a child who works in your district and wishes to take classes from one of the two distance education providers within the school district or within the state. One of them's on East Flats over of Wyoming out there in that least populated county, and the other one's in the Bighorn Basin. And so what we're going to do is take a good look at how they're providing that, what they're doing with it, how it meets the standards, and put it together in our recalibration model. With that, I stand for questions.
Representative Chairman Bonifacio Dan.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just some questions on procedure. This got referred directly to the Committee of the Whole and didn't go through the Education Committee, and I guess I just wanted some background on why this one's special or what the process was, because it's a pretty, I'm not sure I've ever seen it happen in my 10 years to just directly refer a bill to the floor without it going through a committee. So just some process questions.
Chairman Batten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the inquiry. It is an unusual procedure. It's not a procedure that is new to other legislatures across the country, where something goes into the Appropriations Committee and they make an adjustment to it. The adjustment, however, touches on the body or the intent of the measure, and so they take it back to the substantive, or in our case, the standing committee, to ask, you know, how can we get this done? And so what we did, a little imagination and perhaps a little experience, helped us out on that, and we formed a conference committee, a committee for the education committee itself, to take three people and have them work out the coordination, and thus we ended up with the cooperation of, number one, the appropriations committee, which was welcomed, and it was very constructive. But number two, subcommittee was able to contact and work with the State Department of Education, and that's where we ended up with the staff changing and the facility of having make this possible and not kill the bill because of the large amount of money, and to have a report that would be available for recalibration. So I could spend time telling you how much fun it was to do that, but suffice it to say that it's possible to have cooperation and coordination in our body and still stay within time limits and accomplish a goal that has a value to the future of this body. So does that answer your question? I hope it does. I'll spend too much time.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When this came out of committee, we had quite a discussion on it, and the appropriation was pretty big, and my concern was that we're getting pretty spread out with this and getting a lot of extra people, and I really felt like the Department of Education ought to be in on this a little more than a lot of the other folks, and as the subcommittee worked through there, they came up with what I thought was a very well done, and the State Department or the Department of Education superintendent said, well, we can get this done. And that's why we're able to do what we wanted to do with $50,000 instead of the large appropriation that was there. So I appreciate the workers, you know, this committee that has been mentioned. They put this all together and brought it back to the Education Committee, and then we passed this. So I think this is in real good shape. I appreciate the Department of Education working, the superintendent working to accomplish what we wanted done. Thank you.
Any further discussion on House Bill 11? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Patton's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 11 do pass, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 11 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Back to you, Representative Northup.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
It's all yours.
For those of you who have been here longer than the first part of January, there's some very important people in the back there, and I would like to introduce them all and let them all stand up. We'll all give them a hand, and it's not representative back there either. So please stand up when I call your name. Cheryl Fanning, Sharon Novak, Gene Story, Sue Ann Schaefer, Jared Davis, Philip Salzberg, Ed Wallace, Daryl Moore, and Keith Rounds. Please give them a warm welcome.
Yay!
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration will be House Bill 243. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 243 from Speaker Brown, an act relating to crimes and offenses, defining the type of conduct that constitutes child abuse and providing for an effective date, Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 243, Child Abuse, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass for the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
Chairman, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 243 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I'll briefly explain the amendment. You go to page 2 on the bill. You'll see the language in the bill down on line 13 that's been changed from currently reading torture, comma, cruel confinement, or punishment. And what the amendment does, it changes it to torture or cruel confinement, period. So it's a little bit stricter of what it takes the word punishment out, which isn't clearly defined elsewhere. So with that, if there's no questions on the amendment, I'd call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Speaker Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask you to vote no on the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'd like to explain if I might, Mr. Chairman.
The floor is yours.
This bill is in response to an unfortunate set of circumstances that occurred in my county that was in the news. You probably heard about it, that involved the confinement of a child in a small cage outdoors in less than desirable weather with sort of a roof over his head. It was a very regrettable situation. And so in response to that, my county attorney, as she processed that, was not satisfied that the existing statute 62503 was sufficient to prosecute that particular offense. So in response to her concerns, I brought this bill, and we basically added the language you see on page 2 at line 13. So now it says, if you start up on line 4, the actor intentionally or recklessly inflicts upon a child under the age of 16, physical injury is A, mental injury is B. Then we have to add C, torture, cruel confinement, or punishment. And the Standing Committee Amendment strikes the word punishment from that. And as it's written, I think when you look at the sentence structure, the word cruel is a modifier for both confinement and punishment. So I think what it says in the original draft, it says torture, cruel confinement, or cruel punishment. Though it doesn't say cruel before punishment, I think that's a sentence structure. So the committee chose to strike the word punishment. They didn't like that in there. I think it fits, and I would like you to consider that language, and I would ask you to vote no on the Standing Committee Amendment, which would restore the bill to the form that it was originally written by LSO. I stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cohn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the Standing Committee Amendment, I think our good speaker talked about the statutory structure of the language. In addition, we had a discussion about whether punishment should be a defined term within the statute. And in talking with prosecutors across the state, it was the majority opinion that it should remain undefined and that it would be left up for a jury to decide a cruel punishment. So I would urge the body to reject the Standing Committee Amendment. Thank you.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the Standing Committee Amendment, I think that the cases that we've heard that had to do with just a horrible case of somebody being confined in a dog crate, that's clearly covered by cruel confinement. And torture, I think, covers most of the things we can think of. I just think that cruel punishment, and I do agree that the sentence structure is such that it does include cruel punishment. But I'm just a little worried about what does that mean? How does that need to be defined? I just think it might open the door to go in directions that we don't want to go, and I think words do matter. And so I would encourage the body to pass this amendment and leave it so it's, change it so it's only torture or cruel confinement. I think that covers the cases we want to cover sufficiently.
I'm sorry, Speaker Brown.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I agree that words do matter, and I think punishment and confinement in most of our minds are two different things. And so I think it's appropriate for both of them to be in there, and I would ask you to vote no on the standing committee amendment.
Question being called. All those in favor of the standing committee amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The amendment has failed. We're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Speaker Brown.
So, Mr. Chairman, what this does is insert the language, torture, cruel confinement, or punishment, on page 2 at line 13, again on page 3 at line 8, and then in C, which starts on page 3 at line 10, it defines the, it previously defined the crime with A or B, and it adds the language, or the person intentionally inflicts substantial mental or emotional injury upon the victim by the torture, cruel confinement, or punishment of the victim. And so all it does is add those three terms as additional elements for which a person could be prosecuted if a jury agrees that they have engaged in that sort of conduct. And I stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On in favor of the bill, we had quite a bit of discussion in committee number one regarding this statute, and there was a good bill brought by the representative from this county, the younger chairman, that dealt with the range of penalty, and that range of penalty in current statute is only 5 years. And there was discussion in the committee, what about those instances where it doesn't reach the level of aggravated child abuse, but at the same time is a situation that's more serious than the ordinary child abuse. And I think that this bill is an appropriate response to that, and I would urge the body to support it. Thank you.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 243. And this may take a little bit of understanding. So if everyone would look at the daily calendar, you'll see at the bottom of the general file is House Bill 142, which is a child abuse penalty bill with my name on it. It's been moved to the bottom of general file because it is the exact same statute we're talking about in this bill. And so you don't actually need to pull out Bill 142 because it is basically the Standing Committee Amendment. What Bill 142 did, it was change the penalty from 5 years to 10 years for the basic child abuse statute, segueing from the former speaker. Currently, if you look in this Bill 243, you'll see the punishments. We have two in statute, child abuse and then aggravated child abuse. And aggravated child abuse is punishable for 25 years. In conversations I had with several local attorneys, it's extremely difficult to prove an aggravated child abuse charge. And so most attorneys just say, you know, what we think we can get is a five-year discretion. And so because there's no room between the 5-year and the 25-year, it was my intention in the other bill, which passed committee, to raise that to up to 10. And so there's a lot of good testimony that some of these cases are egregious enough that even though you can't prove aggravated for up to 25, they are more serious crimes than a 5-year. And we did hear testimony that there are actually 8 people in Wyoming who have been convicted under aggravated, but certainly there's about 30 that have just hit the simple child abuse. And so what my bill and what this amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, does is just raise the maximum for child abuse penalty from 5 years to 10 years. Still has court's discretion. You know, they could sentence it 2 years or 5 years or 8 years, depending on the severity and complexity of the crime. But this does give the judicial branch or jury more room to impose the correct punishment if something really is egregious, but they can't hit that aggravated statute. These things include things like what we're talking about in this bill, tying up a child. You have to prove permanent long-term damage of a physical nature for aggravated. So even though you could have a child confined or tied up every day or bruising, et cetera, if it's not a long-term permanent debilitating injury, it doesn't rise to the level of aggravated, or at least many prosecutors aren't comfortable trying to go for the aggravated child abuse statute. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but what the Committee of the Whole Amendment does is raise it from 5 to 10 years on the standard child abuse case.
Questions on the Committee of the Whole Amendment? Question being called on the Committee of the Whole Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. We have accepted the committee or the Committee of the Whole Amendment. We're back on the bill. Speaker Brown, do you want to? Questions being called on House Bill 243, Child Abuse. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. House Bill 243 has passed the Committee of the House, or Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor, please.
Mr. Hunt, go ahead.
Actually, a joint privilege of the floor.
The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will defer to Representative Laux.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We've got a bunch of really good-looking ladies up in the gallery up there, and a whole bunch of them are from Casper College. And I want to introduce the nursing staff at Casper College, and one of them is my lovely wife, Heidi, and several other gals with her. And then Hans and I have been conspiring on this a little bit.
So since Representative Laux has introduced his lovely wife, I thought that I would introduce all of her students along with her. So welcome, everybody.
Yay!
Welcome to the House, ladies. Representative Baldwin.
Privilege of the floor, Chairman.
It's yours.
I'd like to add to that introduction, if you notice, there's a lot more good-looking ladies up there. Beyond that group, is very fine-looking, don't get me wrong. But there's a word that there's been a lot of coughing going on the floor. And so the Wyoming Nurses Association decided that they should come down. If you look here in the North Gallery, as well as the rest of that gallery, and maybe some over here, if they would all stand up, lots of folks from the Wyoming Nurses Association who have come to visit us.
Welcome to the House. Representative Freeman.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman. The
floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, in the North Gallery, we have a lot of nice-looking and smart nursing students from Western Wyoming College. If they would stand, and if we could welcome them to the House.
Yay!
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I have two other privileges, if I can. To get certified in nursing, there's three certification processes. Two are basically state-run, and if I get this right, the third one is a national accreditation. We have, and you passed a bill to help alleviate this, going to the other side, the nursing reciprocation program. And basically what happened is at Western Wyoming College, we were having a hard time getting master's credentialed teachers. So we put provisional to where they were getting their master's, working full-time on that, and then teaching in the day. The national accreditation came in and said they didn't like that, so we had to start all over, and we have the accreditation team in Rock Springs today, and I have just been notified about 15 minutes that they gave the preliminary approval to where we regained our national certification so our students can work in VA hospitals and other things. So that's been a very big thing for the last 2 years. So these students have a lot more opportunities. Last privilege,
Yes, sir.
The Faye W. Whitney School of Nursing has several students up there. Carly Mifshek, Megan Rhodes, Krista Como, and Lena, I can't read the handwriting, Mishkada, and Peter Scores. Several of those are my former students, and I would like to welcome to the house.
Welcome to the House. Representative Dan Larson.
Mr. Chairman, can I have the privilege of the floor?
The floor is yours.
I'd like to introduce a group from Powell. It's from the Northwest College. It's a 21. There's 21 students, freshman students in the nursing class. And the instructor is Tina Smith. If you would welcome them to the House.
Please stand.
Please stand.
Welcome to the house. I know the drive you guys have made.
Can I have another privilege?
Yes, sir. The floor is yours.
I also have a nurse from Powell. Her name is Faith Jones, and I'd like to introduce her also.
Welcome, ladies. Representative Zwanzer the Lesser. Oh, the lower.
Well, that feeds right into my privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman, because it's 2015 now, and there are some arguably attractive or unattractive male nurses up there. And so if you would please make the men who have gone into nursing as a valiant and admirable profession feel welcome in this body as well.
Yay! Welcome to the house. The guys, too.
Here's an age, right?
Are we back to work? All right. The next bill for our consideration will be House Bill 158. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 158 from Representative Blackburn, an act relating to child custody and visitation, prohibiting a person convicted of sexual assault from having custody, visitation or access to records of a child that was conceived as a result of the sexual assault, providing applicability and providing for an effective date.
You've heard the reading of the bill?
No, not yet.
Oh.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 158, Sexual Assault Custody Rights, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Escobar, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, Winters, one no vote, Representative Baker, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 158 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And basically, this bill looks at custody rights in sexual assault cases. What the Standing Committee Amendment does is remove the lighter possibility. You have to be convicted to lose those custody rights. And that's what the Standing Committee Amendment does on the top of page 3. It removes lines 1 through 6. So I think I'll wait until after explanation of the bill, and then the bringer of the bill can call for the vote on the Standing Committee Amendment. So I'll move to Representative Blackburn to explain the bill.
Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Speaker, members of the House, I'm not ready for this. Yes, I am. I brought this bill to the committee because of sexual assaults against women and them having to see that perpetrator of that act when they might require a child custody or visitation from those ladies. What this act does is it does keep that person from having any say in the child's upbringing, visitation, any custody, anything of that nature. What it does not do is it does not, at some point in time, if the two people decide to cohabitate or get together, it does not keep them from doing that through the courts. I think I've explained it to the best of my knowledge, and I'll stand for questions.
Representative Zwanerter.
Thanks. I'm continuing the pattern today. My concern on this bill is what happens if the female is the sexual offender. In that case, and a child is conceived, but a female gets charged with sexual assault, does a kid get immediately taken away? And just how would it work? I know in our minds we all think the male will always be the perpetrator, but if it is a female perpetrator, how does that go down when you have a birth of the child, and does it immediately get turned over? Have we thought about those ramifications?
Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Chairman, our representatives, I have thought about those ramifications, and I have thought in my mind that that would be taken care of in the courts by the judge.
Any other questions before we move to the amendment? Representative Miller.
I moved the Standing Committee amendment already. Again, on page 3, it removes lines 1 through 6, which allowed for the custody to be taken away without a conviction. So I'll call for the question on the Standing Committee amendment right now.
Question being called on the Standing Committee amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee amendment has passed. We're back on the bill.
If there's no other questions, I call for the question.
Question being called on the bill. All those in favor of House Bill 158, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 158 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor of House Bill 158, please stand. House Bill 158 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Next bill for consideration is House Bill 203. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 203 from Representative Northrup, an act relating to livestock brands, authorizing recognition of livestock brands registered in neighboring states as specified, and for providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, of Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 203, Livestock Brands, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye. Representative Allen, Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Hunt, Yeagie, Larson, Lindholm, and McKim, signed by Representative McKim, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McKim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 203 do pass. And I turn the explanation over to the sponsor, Representative Northrup.
Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today I bring you House Bill 203. It's Brand Dress Apostasy. As you can guess by the title, we're talking about brands and it relates to people nearby the state line in either side. You could be in Colorado or Wyoming, but we're just saying it's if it does not conflict, and that's the key words, if it does not conflict with any brand of record in Wyoming, that it's okay with Wyoming that you have your brand registered in Wyoming. And so that's the key words, no confliction, doesn't conflict anywhere within the state. With that, I stand for questions.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Whip, I do have a question or two. So do the bordering states share this reciprocity with us?
Representative North.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bordering states do not share it. This is a first step out trying to get this kind of agreement. Montana does not recognize Wyoming brands at all.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I didn't think so. And to go a step further, so we start recognizing the brands from all our bordering states, all we're doing is limiting the number of brands that our residents might be able to apply for and utilize within the state. Is that correct?
Representative Northrup.
That would not be correct because you're looking at brands. If they're given, I'm sorry, I misunderstood what you said because I was thinking about conflicting brands that were very close to maybe your brand or my brand, and so we don't want that. But yes, you were correct in your assumption that if we suck up all the brand decals, that would be right.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. That was my concern, is we're going to limit, if we allow this, we're going to limit the number of brands available for someone to look at and apply for, because we're going to take all our contiguous states, and anything that's there is going to be eliminated to be available. Just a concern I have. And then I might feel more generous if I knew my brand would transfer to the state north of us. But anyway, I see why this was last on the list.
Representative Eklund.
Yes, I had no idea we were going to have this bill up so quickly on general file. We worked it this morning, and it seemed rather innocent, and I didn't have time to talk to the sponsor at all about some concerns that I had later about it. Reciprocity of the brand is probably a word we shouldn't be using in this bill. If it moves forward, I think I'd like to do some amending on it. And would hope there's a possibility that this really needs to be moved to an interim subject because of the way it could change the way we might. I'm trying to explain myself here. It's kind of complex, but if you start recognizing brands from other states, whether they're the same as yours in registered brand in our state, a registered brand in the neighboring state, and they're the same deal, that's what this bill was meant to address, I believe. Some concerns that I have, especially with that word reciprocity, could mean that we would be recognizing brands from other states, any brand. And this seems to be pretty clear on it, but I guess I'm urging some caution. I might bring an amendment at second reading.
Representative Pennell.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I guess I have a question. What prevents, by reading the bill here, but what prevents them to go on ahead and apply for that brand in the state of Wyoming to have and to hold in their name in this state? They could do that, couldn't they?
Representative Northrup.
Yes, they could go ahead and do that. The brand people have suggested that they use a seasonal permit so that they can pay the $150 once a year to have a seasonal permit and go that route rather than register it permanently.
Representative Summers. A follow-up, Representative Pennell? No? Yes?
Well, what I'm wanting, they could apply because most of the brands in the state of Wyoming, you register it and you pay pay a fee, which is 5, 10 years. I guess it depends. I can't remember. But it's 10 years. And if they want the brand in the state of Wyoming, they could do the same thing. That's my question. So why would we be giving them this privilege where it does take away the right of people that may want to have a brand that's close to that, and it would take away from the citizens or the folks here in Wyoming, is my thoughts. Thank you.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I have one question. The agency that regulates brands, did they have, and maybe you answered this, did they have concerns about this, and if so, what were their thoughts on this idea?
Representative Northrup.
Thank you for those two questions, because that's the part I forgot, was that this is practiced within the department right now, and the department as such is saying, if you have a neighboring brand in another state and you would like to register it in Wyoming, they don't have conflict with it. They feel perfectly fine with it. This is just simply codifying what they're doing in rules and regulations.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm a little concerned that that's what they're doing now, because what this bill actually says is that there's no fee required. If you look at page 2, lines 17, 18, and 19, for anybody else that gets a brand recorded, a 10-year brand recorded, there is a fee. So the fee that's talked about here is actually a seasonal fee or permit. So these are two different things. I think we're mixing two different things in this bill. So if this is actually being done by the agency responsible, I think that there's some misunderstanding about what this bill actually does. So I have some reservations. Ladies and gentlemen, we record brands in this state. Other states have recorded brands. If you want your brand recorded in more than one state, you have every ability to do that. This is something else, and I don't know what kind of hybrid it is, but I think it's trying to cross a brand registration and a permit. And I don't think they go together. I'm going to have to do some more looking. But if you look at line 14, this is a seasonal brand. And if we look back at 104, it's talking about brands in a different context, in a different context. So, ladies and gentlemen, I would submit to you that this needs some more look. I don't think it fits actually what is occurring within the agency. Thank you.
Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lines 14 through 20 on page 2 are talking about an annual permit or a seasonal brand permit, and that is where that confusion lies, is that they're saying if you already have a permit, a brand permit in Colorado, and you wish to bring it into Wyoming and have it registered in Wyoming, then you do not have to pay the seasonal permit that, or annual permit that you've normally been paying. Because it's registered as a brand.
Representative Dwan for Dan.
Thanks. Neutral on the bill, because I do think it makes sense statutorily, and I think it's really good, because the last thing I want is someone in another state taking my brand and applying it and taking my livestock and moving two states over or the next state and saying, well, that's my brand in this state and these are my cows. My concern is, what happens after 10 years? Is there a requirement for the state who has registered the brand in Wyoming, if that brand is released in the other state or that company goes under, or the brand is no longer in a state, is there any requirement that it goes away in our state, or does it just stay on our books that it's registered in another state? How do we find out that the brand is no longer active in another state under this bill?
Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great question, because every 10 years, if your brands are renewed, and so a renewal slip's being sent out right now for the brands ending in dash 5. Those brand slips, if your brand ends in dash 5, make sure to get them paid or else you'll lose your brand. And that's how they take care of that. You either have to pay it or lose it.
Any further discussion on the bill? Further discussion on House Bill 203? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman McKim's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 203 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 203 has failed. Division being called for. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. More than that. Where am I at? Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, House Bill 218 having failed, or 203 having failed a voice vote, standing vote, having failed a roll call. Good Lord. The chief clerk will please call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
No.
Baldwin.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
No.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
No.
Clem.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Dayton.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund. Esquivel.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay. Gay. Greer.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Kasparik.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
No.
Krohn.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
No.
Lockhart. Laux,
no.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
aye.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
no.
Pelkey,
no.
Petroff,
aye.
Piperinen,
no.
Pinnell,
no.
Reeder,
no.
Schwartz,
no.
Summers,
no.
Steinmetz,
aye.
Stubson,
no.
Throne,
no.
Walters, Wilson,
no.
Winters,
no.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
Gay,
no.
Gay, no.
No.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Patton, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 13 aye, 47 no.
Having failed a roll call vote of the House, House Bill 203 is indefinitely postponed.
Next bill for our consideration. Oh, we have Majority Floor Leader Rosie Berger.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairman Northrup. And I'm sorry for what just happened to you.
Well, it is.
Oh. Oh. Members, we have now up House Bill 201 and then House Bill 28, and that will be the end of our general file for the day.
Thank you, Majority Floor Leader Berger. The next bill for our consideration will be House Bill 201. The reading clerk will read the bill. Yes, I'm on 201.
House Bill 201 from Representative Larson, an act relating to public funds, authorizing political subdivisions to deposit public funds in other banks as specified, modifying a definition and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 201, Deposits by Political Subdivisions, respectfully reports same back to the House. with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye. Representatives Blackburn, Edwards, Jennings, Paxton, and Danz-Wanitzer. Those who voted no. Representatives Gay, Kirkbride, and Lindholm. One excuse, signed by Representative Danz-Wanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report to do so with a recommendation that House Bill 201 do pass. And I would further move the Standing Committee amendment on this bill and turn it over to the good Representative Lloyd Larson.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the Standing Committee amendment, which is on page 3, and it moves the effective date from July 1, 2015 to immediately, and unless there's any questions, I wouldn't want to interfere with that conversation up there, but...
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to postpone the Committee of the Whole amendment here for a little bit until I get the explanation of a bill. Folks, I have to give you a little history on this. A couple of days ago, there was an Attorney General's opinion that was placed on your desk. I hope that might still be somewhere in your file. I put that on your desk when I thought this bill might be coming up for air, but it kind of had trouble getting there, but here we are today, and it'll be kind of important to be able to reference this. In my county, not in my district, but in my county, there is a small town, one of two in the state of Wyoming, that doesn't have a bank. And so I innocently was approached one day about that situation, and the community says, you know, we don't have a bank in our community, but we have a credit union. But we can't deposit our funds in a credit union, so we have to drive 20-plus miles on a regular basis to make deposits. That seems silly to us. Is there not something we can do? And I thought, oh, surely we can. My naivety, or however you say that, was starting to show. So I come down, being on the Minerals Committee, and I visited with the Banking Commissioner, and I says, this is the deal. Is there any way that we could get a letter stating that this community could put their use of a credit union for a depository? And he looked at me with this look like I've maybe just stepped into something. He says, we probably ought to go talk to the treasurer. So we walked down to the treasurer. Treasurer's office, I explained the same thing. They said, yeah, we think constitutionally you're okay. And I said, well, would you guys write a letter for me and state that it's okay, one to the credit union, one to the bank? I don't want anybody to get in trouble. He said, well, no, if you're going to want a letter, let's go over to the Attorney General's. So we went to the Attorney General, and I explained it to him, and he says, oh, yes, we've heard this before. It is a problem, and we'll do an Attorney General's opinion for you, and then as that comes back, he says, you can go from there. And he says, the issue really isn't the Constitution that prohibits funds being put into a credit union, and I'll get to that, but there is a statute that's very firmly in place that says you can't put state funds or political subdivisions funds in a credit union. So, So I'm sure that you've received a number of emails and probably correspondence from your friendly financial institutions. I was surprised how quickly, when this thing surfaced, that the reinforcements from both sides come down, hike their leg, and mark the territory. I just was surprised about how passionate they were on this issue. And so... When I got the Attorney General's opinion back, he said on page 2, he says, all money belonging to the state or to any county, city, or town, village, or other subdivision, and this is what the Constitution says, except as herewith otherwise provided, whenever practicable, should be deposited in a national bank or banks or in a bank incorporated under the laws of the state. Now, when the framers of our state constitution wrote that requirement in the constitution, you can imagine that perhaps in some of our small rural communities there weren't a bank, and so they would probably take the funds and they'd go down to the local mercantile and maybe put them in the safe there, whatever they could do to protect it, wherever practicable. In fact, one of the drafters of the our Constitution, a Mr. H.S. Eliot, suggested during the Constitutional Convention debates, the idea of putting the words whenever practicable was that in some counties perhaps there might be no national banks or banks organized under the state, and it would be improper to have it send to another county for deposit. And so it says, the Attorney General says, the situation you, referring to me, describe probably fulfills the requirement of the Wyoming Constitution, Article 15, Section 7. Does not unequivocally require rural municipalities like the town in my district, or in my county, to deposit public funds in traditional banks. So that's the Constitution. But we have to go to the statute now. And the statute is very clear. That it requires, and let me, that all our monies in state and in political subdivisions have to be kept in a state bank, a state or national bank, or credit unions. And I need to, please bear with me. It says, the statute refers to several appropriate financial institutions, national or state banks, federal or state savings and loans, and federal savings banks. It says traditional banks are purely commercial entities with traditional corporate structures. Savings and loan associations exist for the benefit of the members, although the members of federal associations do not have any control or management rights. Federal credit unions, on the other hand, in contrast, are always nonprofit, tax-exempt entities that are democratically controlled. So, there's the stage. And what I've come to realize in my innocence as I walk down this path is that there are some very high emotions and that there are some real feelings between these two entities that exist. My point was, I think it's silly that if you have a community that doesn't have a bank, that we would require them to have to drive round trip 30, 40 miles to make deposits when there's another financial institution there that they could use as a depository. Now, there's some criteria when you deposit monies from municipalities. They have to be able to be insured, and a credit union can only insure to $250,000. So if a municipality was going to use that as a depository, any funds over that amount would have to be put into a bank. But how do we do that? How do we do, there's one-sided the argument that says you don't want to go there at all. That is unclean, unholy, and every other vile thing that you can think of to even consider that request. The other side is scrapping for a fight. These are kind of the, in biblical terms, the Samaritans of the bunch, and they're saying, we're okay, this isn't a big deal, but we've been treated as the illegitimate stepchild long enough, and so, here's old Lloyd in between here, and all I'm wanting to do is to be able to have this bank, or have this town, or another town like it, be able to just not have to drive to make deposits for the bank. It seems simple to me. So, after the Attorney General's opinion, which it says on the last page of that opinion, in its current form, the statute does not permit political subdivisions to deposit public funds with credit unions. So there it is. What I've attempted to do is to protect the territory that has been thoroughly marked and remarked on several occasions, but yet try to allow for this situation, this thing to take place. And so if you would go to page 2 of your bill, and it refers to the statutes that require deposit, the depository of municipal and state funds. It's and remember, statute says state banks, national banks, or savings and loans are approved. And so we say there on line four that with respect to deposits of state funds, because we're not talking about a state entity, we're talking about a political subdivision or this small town. So with respect to the deposits of the state funds, the bank includes also includes the state national banks and the state savings and loan association. But then we go down on line nine, and we say, as used in 94801, which identifies what banks should be used to deposit funds in, through 94818, with respect to the deposit of funds of political subdivisions, bank means any of the institutions identified that we've mentioned over and over here, when practicable. Now, what does practicable mean? Now, what we tried to do was mirror the language of the Constitution, because that's what the Constitution said. But there's a fair argument, because we're not in the day when there's just a mercantile safe there. So what does practicable mean? Where could those funds be put, and who determines that? It was a fair argument. And so we drafted an amendment that says, if I can find it here, that says, or when not practicable, an institution approved by the Board of Deposits. Now, the Board of Deposits is found in 94801, and it says the State Loan and Investment Board is established and shall perform the duties of the Board of Deposits. So if you had a community that didn't have a bank and wanted to put their funds in a credit union, they would have to go before the Board of Deposits and get permission to do that. And then if that was approved, they would be allowed to use that as a depository. Now, there were a lot of arguments, folks, in the committee that says, well, why can't you just ship them via the Internet? And why can't you, you know, this isn't a big deal with technology the way it is today. Well, I won't argue that. I won't argue that. But there's a lot of people in small communities that still use cash, that would like to go and pay their utility bill or their water bill or whatever it is in cash. And so you've got a cash issue. Could you have a cash drawer? Oh, I'm sure you could. I'm sure you could. It just seems silly to me that we have this big issue going on, and I think our statutes are very clear, and I don't have any problem with leaving the statutes the way they are, but we find exceptions to many things, and I don't think if there is not one of those institutions in a community and they get permission from the Board of Deposits to allow them to use that as a depository. So there you have it. The bill has been brought forth. It's just tickled me to death to see the discussion on both sides of this. And I have no skin in the game other than I just think it's the right thing to do. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would take questions and try to answer them to the best of my ability.
We're still on the amendment. Questions been called on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The amendment's passed. Back on the bill.
And Mr. Chairman, similar with the bill, I'd stand for any questions and try to answer any of those concerns.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I might have missed why it seems to me that the approved by the Board of Deposits would be it's kind of just some busy work. And I can't see in the Constitution where it would evoke that kind of a red tape type thing. And I don't know if, I agree with the bill. I see that it makes sense. But, you know, I don't know if this is a hoop that we really should require a political subdivision to have to go through. If the Constitution has the word practicable in it, we're good, aren't we?
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And long and expletive definition and explanation of what this is all about. Let me reduce this to you. This has been before us before. Basically, it's two communities in the state that have a problem because they do not have banks in their communities. The banks and the credit unions are at each other's throats, like those two families in the southern hills of Tennessee. They do not like each other. In this particular case, one of those entities has the hand up. And so the other one would just like the playing field leveled, which would facilitate those local communities doing business in their own communities. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. If you want these two communities to keep driving down the road and having to deposit their money someplace else or deposit it locally, that is the choice that's in front of you. On and for the bill.
Representative Patton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The problems connected with this is one of convenience, of taking the money or the checks that flow and get it into some secure spot. That's one issue. The other issue is, what kind of interest rate do you get, or do you get an interest rate on it? Small institutions don't have access to the volume that it takes to have repos, which is an overnight instrument. It's secure, very secure. It's all federal paper that they're working with on repos. How do you get the money from there into something that's going to pay about three times as much as what just convenience might provide? On for the bill, but I would suggest that we do a little work with perhaps the Treasurer's office and see if there isn't some way that we could have a journal entry and get an interest rate as well as a security and not inconvenience the people in the handling of the funds. So on that, on the constructive side, on and for the bill.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could maybe address the first question that came up about the perhaps not needing the amendment to define practicable. I think it really resolves concerns that one of the entities has, and it's a fair compromise. If in some almost unimaginable way this bill were to pass, I'm ready for negotiations in the Middle East, and we'll see that. To the second point that came up, you know, if that entity can have those deposits in there and can secure a higher interest rate at any other place they'd have to put their money would be in a bank, and so they can write a check out of that depository to a bank, and it's particularly if their funds exceed what is guaranteed, they'd want those funds to go to a bank that would secure and pass that $250,000 that credit unions secure. So I think that you can address the interest rates and do some things there. They could determine what kind of they could negotiate that and to determine what level of monies they need to keep there at the local institution.
Question being called. All those in favor of House Bill 201, please say aye. Those opposed? No. House Bill 201 is passed. Division being called. All those in favor of House Bill 201, please stand. House Bill 201 has passed the House. The next bill for our reading, the next bill for consideration will be House Bill 28. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 28 from Representative Dave Zwanzer, an act relating to criminal procedure providing for the issuance of investigative subpoenas for internet fraud, providing for confidentiality, providing definitions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of the Committee, number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 28, investigative subpoenas, reports back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Escobel, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pinnell. Those who voted no, Representatives Baker, Halverson, Pelkey, and Winters. Signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 28 do pass. I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and the explanation for both will come from Chairman Zwanitzer, the senior.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the Standing Committee Amendment, it's just some wordsmithing, and I'd ask you to vote yes, and then we'll take care of the bill right after that.
Question being called on the Standing Committee Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Standing Committee Amendments passed the House. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to the body for giving me a yes vote on that amendment. Basically, after this bill came out of a committee, and the reason it's been on the bottom of the file is there was a lawsuit, and they've been trying to get it resolved, but I don't think it's going to happen. So basically what happened was a telecommunication company went to one of the Midwestern states, and they were denied a subpoena that's basically what we are asking for here, because it was claimed that it wasn't in compliance with the federal obligations and the ones that are similar to in this bill. So anyway, it's going back and forth in the court case. The only way to remedy to this bill is to change some wording, and then it would not be germane to the bill and would have to start over. So use your judgment on that. And I think I don't even want any questions. Thank you.
Question's been called. All those in favor of House Bill 28, please say aye. Those opposed to House Bill 28, please say no.
No.
House Bill 28, having failed a voice vote, pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, the bill failing of standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. In favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. More than one. All right, we have more than one. Having failed the standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen. Baker. Baldwin.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Clem.
No.
Clem.
No.
Connolly. Dayton.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel. Freeman.
No.
Gay.
No.
Greer.
No.
Halverson.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Hunt. Yagi.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Kasparik.
No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
No.
Crone. Larson Lloyd.
No.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Madden.
McKim.
McKim? McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
No.
Patton.
No.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
No.
Petroff.
No.
Pieperinen.
No.
Pinnell.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Schwartz.
No.
Summers.
No.
Steinmetz. Stubson.
No.
Throne.
No.
Walters. Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Swanitzer Dan.
No.
Swanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Esquivel? Aye to no? Crone? Aye to no? Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. One aye, 58 no, one excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, House Bill 28, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Majority Floor Leader Rosie Berger. We will stand at ease until the sound of the gavel. Committee of the Whole, come back to order. Representative or Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
It's all yours.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, you just have a handout that just hit your tray. We just finished this thing and got it kind of organized for you for our, when we consider House Bill 1 next week. Members, I'd first like you to find your goldenrod. I think the most recent one was a couple days ago, 2 days ago. You've got it somewhere. This will be really an important document as we go through this. I don't think we'll probably get an updated goldenrod tomorrow as well. But if you could find your goldenrod right now, we're just going to go through this, take a few minutes. Okay, on the goldenrod, it's printed front to back. So if you could just open it up, and it's page 3 at the top. It's really the front page of the second page, but it's page 3 because it goes front to back as 1 and 2. And I just want to direct your attention to the middle of page 3 where it says Legislative Stabilization Reserve Account. Everybody find that? And then you can see, just want to talk to you about the beginning balances. And then if you go about to the middle of that section where it says Net Revenues Available After Transfers, and you can see the two columns. The column to the left is the governor's recommendations off the January Craig. And then you can see the second column is the JAC recommendations. That's at the very top of the page. And that's consistent then throughout the goldenrod here on this. So if you go down and you can see that there's a difference between the governor's recommendation and the JAC's recommendation of the final balance in the LSRA with our budget recommendations. You can see that with the governor's recommendation, it's $1,855,000,000. And you can see the JAC's is $1,811,000,000. And that $44 million is what I call the natural gas bump that we had about this time last year. In the governor's letter, he was going to just allow that to flow to the LSRA. Your JAC, and we'll talk more about this as we work the budget next week, but we put all these revenues on the table, so there are no funds transferring to the LSRA. So I just keep these in a stack, so I pulled out a goldenrod from January 28th, and it had different columns. It had the governor's October Craig status and the governor's January Craig status. And back that $1.8 billion number was actually $1.996 billion. Remember, that's when we came to the session, everybody says you have $2 billion in the LSRA. Well, we've intercepted flows that were going to travel to the LSRA to balance the $222 million budget hole and then fund some things in this budget that we'll talk about. So whether you want to call it appropriating out of the LSRA or intercepting funds before they get to the LSRA, that is, in fact, the money that we use. Okay, and you'll see that here as we go through it. So the balance when we leave here, and on as expected off this January Craig, will be about $1.8 billion, okay, instead of the $2 billion. So that's the first thing I wanted to talk to you about. And then I guess if we go to the front page, I just want to now again the two columns. You can see governor's rec is on the left, the JEC rec is on the right, and the way the goldenrod is divided, you can see funds available. So that's our revenue, and you can see that our revenue is slightly higher than the governor's. We're at $3.65 billion. He's at $3.61 billion. That's that $44 million in natural gas bump that I referenced a minute ago. So if you go up about three lines, you can see 2015 governor's JAC recommendation, cancellation of transfers to LSRA. The governor's rec was $140 million, followed across to the JAC rec, $184 million. Okay, so that's that natural gas bump. Now, the second part, the second part is the expenditures. And so if, as you follow farther down, governor's total funds appropriated transfers is $3.699 billion, and our JAC position is $3.542. I want you to read the asterisk down below. Why are we so much lower? Why are we appropriating so much less than the governor? And basically, it's the way we did it and what funds we used. And so if you read the asterisk, there's two asterisks down there, and it says the JAC also appropriates $112 million in fiscal year 2015 contingent funds and $165.9 million in fiscal year 2016 contingent revenues. And really that, I'd like to point out to you, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but that $165 million, you'll see, primarily goes to savings accounts. It's going to specific projects out there that if we come back next year and if the money looks like it's available, we've got it in these multiple coffee cans from state facilities to state office buildings to community colleges and the like, and you'll see that here in a minute. So I don't really count that as appropriation. They're not appropriated yet. They're lined up in a tranche in a priority order and set aside, and we'll certainly look at those again next year. But I would count that $112 million, if you back up, in contingent revenues that will be available this July 1st. And so then when you look at that those numbers between us and the governor, you know, we're lower than him. We're at about 3.66, so we're about $30, $40 million less than him. Okay? So that's kind of where the goldenrod's at. I'd tell you the part that's, I guess if you flip to the second page of the goldenrod, and I just want to show you how this is the general fund on page 2. And once again, you have two columns, the governor's rec on the left, and then the JAC rec on the right. And then you can see this first group is revenues. And you can see we've had some bills come through that have affected the revenues. And so if you go down about three or four lines, House Bill 72, Volunteer Firefighter EMT Pension Account. That reduced general fund revenues by $1.1 million because we took a greater proportion of that fire premium tax. We had that debate on the floor. The House Bill 141, a malt beverage tax repeal, that reduced revenue to the general fund by $289,000. But then we've had a bill, the Senate File 64, the Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act Extension, which increased revenue to the general fund by $530,000. So those are some effects on the revenue side. Okay, and then if you go to appropriations, follow the second group on that page, you can go farther down and you can see the individual bills. And for a bill to get listed on the goldenrod, it has to pass committee of the whole in one house or the other. And so you can see the bills. And if you go down, the first one there is for $25,800. Restoration of voting rights by the Department of Corrections, House Bill 15. You can see a large one there is the NRC agreement state authorization, House Bill 27, 1.4. House Bill 58, developmental disability service transition grants, $1 million. And so you can see all those added up. And those add up to $3,072,000. And so if we pass more bills, this is actually 2 days old, so I think the word I just got this afternoon is about 100,000 off that we've passed in both chambers, added about 100 more thousand to the spending. As we continue to pass bills with appropriations out of general file, they will show up on this goldenrod. Okay, and then members, if you would flip to what's called page 4, it's the back of the second page. And you can see then the school foundation program. You can see the governor's rec the JAC rec, and I wanted to just point out that if you go down under the appropriations piece, that you can see the 2015 governor's rec on external cost adjustment costs $11.3 million. You can see the JAC's approach is $4.69 million. And then that turns around several flows and transfers. Probably won't get into all that here, but basically things flow down the page. We fully fund the foundation program until it has a $100 million reserve. Any leftover, we flow to school CapCon. If we fully fund school CapCon and have any reserve, it flows to the permanent land fund holding account. If any, then if any is needed up in the school foundation program, it won't flow necessarily backwards. It skips school CapCon and flows all the way to the top, from bottom to top. But I'd certainly love to sit down and draw pictures for you if you'd like on that deal. I really have to draw lines right to the appropriation. And you can see mine. I mean, I've got some lines drawn on there, but I don't think I can cover it here with no visual aid. So that's the goldenrod, and you'll kind of see where these numbers fall in. I'd like to turn now to this spreadsheet. Now, we're going to have a couple items, and I would just caution you. I mean, I think this is accurate, but this is not the official budget document. You know, House Bill 1 is the official budget document. But this is a summary. We'll call this the summary sheet. Or maybe we'll call it, here's my point. You're going to get next week on legal paper what's called, we've always called the cheat sheet. And it shows you, you know, the governor's recs and what funds everything comes from, and we work those simultaneously with the budget. I think that item will become a public document, although, you know, the cautionary part is not official. There can be mistakes in it. And that's why we've never shared it out on the website or given it to the press as an official document. I think leadership is going to decide on that, whether we will, but I would just caution everybody. And then so we call that the cheat sheet. Whether we'll continue to call it the cheat sheet or not, I don't know. I don't know how that sounds going out across the mic to the world. But we're going to call this in this house, we'll just call this the summary sheet. Okay? So I drew some circles and triangles and labeled them 1, 2, 3 on your sheet just so we can reference that. And so if you look at column 1, these are this expenditure category 1, and these were the immediate needs. And this is really plugging the budget hole. And then these things we felt were important to fund immediately with the monies that we know we have that are guaranteed. You can see the largest items there are rebasing of nursing homes. And you can go down. These are in order by agency. The Help America Vote Act is the first one up there. It's a federal mandate. We have to do it. $735,000. And then reimbursed for the constitutional amendment that failed. We always reimburse those. Treasurer's Office requests. We'll talk about each of these specifically next week, but you can just go down the list. Agency 6 has 3 requests on there. Agency 10, agriculture, and then Agency 20 and 24. 48 is the Department of Health. You can see that those are pretty large expenditures. $3.5 million to rebase nursing homes. Public county health nurses, $1.1 million. DD preschools, $500,000. Hospice services for $17,000. Adult DD waivers at $1.5 million. Community crisis beds, we added some funding to that and changed a little bit. We'll talk more next week. And then you can just see these are all items we felt we needed to do and that were important. Adult community corrections. And split sentencing on Agency 80 corrections, those were continuation. We only funded them for 1 year last year because we had questions and we said, we're just going to give you 1 year funding. That's what this legislature did and we want you to come back. So that's not an increase. It's just simply the second year of funding and so on. So you can just, if you go down to Agency 6 at the bottom, it says deappropriate merit compensation. It doesn't have a negative in front of it. So that was not used. So we went in and deappropriated that, captured $2 million. the Honor Farm, and then Economic Development Subcommittee. So those are some. So those expenditures there were $9 million. You can see the red number in the negative. You can see that what we covered with bills that have passed Committee of the Whole is about 3.9. It's probably $4 million now. So that subtotal is probably around $13 million. And then if you follow column one all the way down, you can see the revenue. So you see the January reversions. Number one, you see the SIPA account that we went in and captured. That was the governor's recommendation as well. And the October 14 reversions that would have flowed to the LSRA, $140 million. The number four is the $44 million and what I call the natural gas bump that we talked about that did not flow. And then you see the revenues that went down, $222 million. And so that subtotal, 18 minus the almost 13, leaves us about $5 million in this first category for bills that are still working through the process. And if there are any successful budget amendments to House Bill 1 next week, that would increase appropriations. So it's a pretty small, one of the smallest supplemental increases, roughly $9 million that we've probably ever had. Okay? And then if you go to category number two, and these are the contingent funding, and these are based really on capital gains that are realized. So we have that money, but it's not recognized until the end of the fiscal year because we could have capital losses. And, you know, there was, I think it was 2009, where we had a $100 million loss in the spring in 1 month. And so it's not in the bank, but we're probably more confident on those contingent revenues. So then, and we'll talk about all these, but these are now listed not by agency, but by JAC priority. So these ones in blue in column two, and you can see capital rehabilitation was the first one. I mean, we're going to pay our bill on the capital. Gillette Madison project. We paid for $10 million out of AMLs, and this was $2 million in general fund hit. We'll talk about each of these. Cease and transfer to local governments for their landfills we thought was very important. High on the list. These next ones are all matching funds for the university. It's $4 million, $2.5 million, $20 million, and $20 million are matching funds. And so we figured anytime you can double your money and make 100% the day you sign the law, we put those in there. You can see the rest of them kind of going down. We have community college projects. We have the High Bay Research. Some money for Level 2 on Science Initiative, Evansville Bridge Design. You can just kind of keep going down that list, and so on. So if you go through that list, I have it circled there. The spending contingent appropriations are $112 million. You follow farther down to the triangle where the revenue is at. The SIPA that did not go into the health facilities we captured, and the governor, that was part of his suggestion. And then that $76 million that I talked about that are anticipated investment earnings. These are above the Craig forecast, below the 5% spending policy amount. So that leaves about $3.8 million in that category two. And then farther out, members, on number three, and we'll be here next year again to look at these. These are contingent appropriations if the money comes in. And we put these also in order. And you can see the first one up there is capital rehabilitation. The second one is $5 million for surface transportation, the passing lanes that we heard so much about. And I think when you go into the budget, we have kind of a unique way to fund that. That's the final payment on those passing lanes. We've got money that you don't see in these general funds that will... We've appropriated to get a head start on the safety issue on Highway 59. And then these other ones are basically savings accounts, Science Initiative, Community College STEM matching, state facilities in Casper, Evansville Bridge, state facilities. We're talking about our state hospital and our lander facilities, our facility in Fremont County and all around the state, really, and Buffalo and elsewhere, but our state health facilities, that appropriation would take that account now over $80 million, and so we're getting closer. We've been saving for a couple of years on that. We just added money to savings accounts. We did add three to air enhancement, I think, in Sweetwater County. It's is needed, and we felt if those monies come in, we'd help with that in Sweetwater and Sheridan County. The Corbett pool's a budget item. We have about $2 million in there we're trying to save, so that's just another savings account. Industrial Park savings account, we've talked about that. We put $5 million into a coffee can there. Disaster relief, forest fires, floods, public TV matching, and the Wildlife Natural Resources Trust Fund corpus. And then these last two on both those tranches is the work on Jacoby Golf Course, which the state owns. So, and then if you look down, you can just see it's $173 million. And these are above the Craig forecast, but below the 5% spending policy. These are monies that have traditionally flown and swept to the LSRA. So, but we'll be here to talk about those certainly as we go forward. So, Mr. Chairman, I know that was long, and it's a long day. It's a long week, and I'd stand for any questions. And I think any members of the Appropriations Committee would be more than happy. If you want to meet in small groups, a lot of times people want to meet in groups and ask questions. Those kind of things were available at really your convenience. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we look at this, and I really appreciate this, this is the one I was asking for, and we had our meeting downstairs that tells us what we're spending on, and just in general as I look at this with the $200 million that we're off this year and projected $300 million that we're off next year, I want to really talk about priorities, and I think the Joint Appropriations have looked and looked and looked at priorities, but as I look at this, and I hope we all will look at these, and then we can go to the budget that the good chairman passed out Monday or whenever, and each one of these projects are explained on that one. Is that correct? And if we look at that, where are our priorities, and you start totaling up some of these numbers, I really think we ought to look at funding the existing things, the existing needs we have before we start new. And I'll get some handouts for you to just show how much we've spent in some different areas. I've given you the handout of the increase in budget and employees for every agency, handed that out a couple weeks ago. And then there was another one that I handed out that had salaries over $80,000. So I think the appropriations have put their priorities on here, and they've done it, they've looked at everything. I think we now need to look at those priorities, and if we differ, that's what the chairman's saying. We need to look at them, and maybe, there's a list of priorities, appropriations in the 16 budget, in the 17 budget, and we really need to have that discussion. And I think we as a body have the will to really change some things on here if that's what we'd like to do. But we got to understand that. And so I really appreciate, Mr. Chair, you putting this together for us. And I hope we'll take some time and digest this, go into the budget so we understand that. So I appreciate that and just raise those concerns. Thank you.
Chairman Harshman.
Kate, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just to comment on the previous comments. So all these are explained in your budget bill. And if you want to look at this number two list, that would be in section 345, because it comes in July 1st of 2015. So there's fives at the end of it. So when you look in the back of your budget, it'll be in section 345. Now these ones in 16 will be in section 346. So we tried to make this all match. So We wanted to get it all on one page so it's easy to look at and easy to talk about. And so all those things are in your budget. The budget language is in there, and that's the official document that we work off of, obviously. These are just items to kind of summarize and help us. And so once again, this is not official. It is a summary to help us all, and there could be mistakes in it, so it's not a thing that I'm going to give to a reporter in my hometown and say, this is it, because it's just not an official deal. Our budget is. So with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Harshman. I appreciate everything you and the Appropriations Committee does for us. Thank you. Madam Majority, Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
All right. You have heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. All those opposed?
Reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, our committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill 233, recommended do pass. House Bill 197, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 212, amended, recommended do pass. Representative Berger moved that the House rise and sit again. House Bill 237, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 210, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 11, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 243, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 158, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 203, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 201, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. And it is signed by Representative Northrop, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
Here's the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Northrop. Yeah. Now, at that order of business of introduction of the budget bill, House Bill 1, reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 1 from Appropriations, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government.
Budget Bill 1 is referred to Committee of the Whole. Standing committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom we referred House Bill 163, Critical Access House Bill Endowment Challenge Program respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 174, Nicotine Products Regulation, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 187, Marijuana Impact Study, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 219, Decorated Combat Veterans License Plates, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, two no votes, Representative Nicholas and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 235, Foreign Business Entities Reinstatement, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Stubson, and Nicholas, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
Messages from the Senate.
Message number 186. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 84, Enhanced Recovery of Carbon Dioxide Certification. Ayes 26, noes 1, 3 excused. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 187. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 102, Medical Billing Provisional Providers. Ayes 27, excused 3. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 188. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 137, Farm License Plates. Ayes 25, noes 2, 3 excused. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 141, State Budget Development. Ayes 27, 3 excused. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 142, Building Code Regulation. Ayes 12, noes 15, 3 excused. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate on the third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 123, Collective Bargaining for Firefighters. 14 ayes, 13 noes, 3 excused. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 192. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 146, Spending Policy Amendments. Ayes 23, noes 4, excused 3. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. And finally, Mr. Speaker.
Are you still with me?
Upon reconsideration, the bill listed below failed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. The bill is indefinitely postponed. Senate File 123, Collective Bargaining for Firefighters. Ayes 13, noes 14, 3 excused. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Committee announcements. First announcement, ladies and gentlemen, the Rules Committee Number 12 will meet today upon adjournment to consider the following bill, House Bill 205, Revisers Bill, and that meeting will be in Room 302. Chairman Harvey.
I think you're all going to be really interested in listening to this committee announcement, if I could have your attention for just a minute. The Labor Committee will meet Friday, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., in Room 302 to hear House Bill 245, Medicaid Share Plan 2. We will further meet at noon, and the noon recess, to continue with House Bill 245, Medicaid Share Plan. There are some members of my committee that are members of other committees as well. I would like to read their names, and if you are their committee chairman, would you please excuse them for the 8 a.m. meeting? Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Kasparic, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Croker.
Mr. Speaker, your committee, number one, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow, Friday, February 6th at 9 a.m. in room H8. This meeting was rescheduled from Thursday noon today to hear the following bills: House Bill 222, Sibling Visitation Rights, and House Bill 230, Compensation for Exoneration Based on DNA.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This announcement is for my two committee members left after the rest are going to the Health Committee. Tomorrow morning we'll be meeting Friday, February 6th at 8 a.m. Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, Committee Number 6, to hear House Bill 208, Hard-to-Draw Hunting Licenses, and House Bill 175, Determination of Lottery Proceeds.
Vice Chairman Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. We'll meet 10 minutes after adjournment in room H17 to hear House Bill 241, Electronic Driver's License, and House Bill 223, YDOT, General Fund Budget Requests.
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number two, Appropriations, will meet at 9 a.m. tomorrow for House Bill 144, Education, School Safety, and Security. And Mr. Speaker, will continue the hearing on House Bill 162, Providers Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. That'll be on noon recess. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock to consider House Bill 176, Supplemental Budget Request Limitation, House Bill 236, OSHA Penalties, House Bill 224, Burn Order Violations Restitution, and House Bill 229, OSHA Regulations.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, Education Number 4, on Friday, 15 minutes after the recess, will consider House Bill Number 231 and House Bill 196.
Madam Majority Floor Leader, that clears the deck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. February 6th, 2015. Ladies and gentlemen, 10 a.m., it's good news. The general file is as follows. 163, 174, 187, 219, 235, and any additional bills that may survive committee. And with that, thank you very much for your hard work.
You've heard the motion to adjourn. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're adjourned until 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow.